Thanks, Pastor Cindy. Well, good morning. Welcome to the Super Bowl of Christian Sundays. Chris was reminding me of that this morning, Chris, our drummer. but it's true, you know, Christianity would not exist if it were not for this day. And so the resurrection means everything. And oftentimes we treat it as like this nice day where we get to dress up in nice clothes. So I very intentionally didn't change like my, like this is what I wear every Sunday. I know nobody's ever come up to me and say, oh, Pastor, why do you wear the same thing every Sunday? It's just easier that way. But I decided, you know what, today I'm not going to go like all Easter out, you know. I'm just going to, it's, you know, we wouldn't exist every Sunday if it weren't for this day. And so this is, and this is the reason why we meet on Sunday, because Jesus rose on Sunday. So he is risen. He is risen indeed. Man, what good news. Well, I'm so glad that you guys are here at this first service. You know, this is the first year that we've had two services, and we've been doing this since we came back from the pandemic so that people could spread out a little bit. But the reason I'm glad you guys are here is because it's going to be bonkers in the next service. So thanks for coming out early and being here with us. Part of the reason that it's going to be bonkers is we have baptisms in the next service. That's why the baptismal font is back here, and there's eight of them, and we're really excited about that. And I had the privilege of interviewing each of these baptismal candidates and hearing their stories. And several of them are very young, and I got to listen to them on video, and because I put the videos together in a small church, like the pastor does everything. Like I help Adam clean the place sometimes and move stuff around. I do plumbing, and that's how I hurt my wrist earlier this year. And I do the video work. So I was putting the videos together, and I heard over and over and over again just the beautiful testimonies of the folks who were going to be baptizing in the next service. A couple of them just said, "I just want to know God better." And so the baptism is just a step in the process of a lifelong, I want to be closer to Jesus. I want to know God better. Young kids confidently saying, this is important to me. Some of us as adults can barely imagine saying that now. And we've got young kids saying, this is important to me. I want to make this decision. Teenagers saying, I want to make a decision and I want people to know it. And I know some of these teenagers who are like, for a while have been like, I'm not sure I want people to know it. Now they're saying, you know what, if I can't make this decision, if I can't say in front of my church and other people who are going to be here that I want to follow Jesus, I'm not going to be able to say it anywhere. And they've articulated that, and it's so beautiful. But there's one testimony that's really powerful. I'm going to share it here with you in just a moment, a guy named Paul Huang. And he just shared so plainly at the beginning of his testimony, I have been seeking the truth. The truth is an important reason why I came here. And so can I just share that one testimony with you that we'll see later in the second service, but I wanted you guys to hear it as well this morning. So let's go ahead and listen to that.
My name is Paul Huang. My Chinese name is Chorong Huang. I am from Amoy, a small island in south of China. I have been seeking the truth. The truth is an important reason why I came here. In the modern history of China, many missionaries traveled thousands of miles from the United States, Europe, and other places to China to spread the gospel of God. They moved to inland China with their children. They raised funds to build churches and spread the gospel of the Lord Jesus. But they also did more. They raised funds to help China establish a modern education system and medical system, which greatly improved the living conditions of the Chinese at the time. They did this even in the face of war, language differences, and material scarcity. Even during a time of war, they risked and they came. But why? This question has been bothering me for a long time. Later, when I came to the United States, I began to read the Bible. I gradually realized that it was the love of Jesus in order to change the hearts of people with hard hearts, and it was the mercy of Jesus to save corrupt people, even in the far eastern places. So for me, the actions of missionaries in that era deeply influenced me and caused me to seek the truth about Jesus. In China, we have been educated on evolution and atheism since we were young. But many of them, the Chinese people, are kneeling and worshiping various other gods, even people. This seemed like a contradiction, and I have been very confused about the situation for a long time in my life. I can't accept that this vast universe is an accident. When I started reading the Bible, it seemed that all my life's confusions were unraveled. When I realized that I am a sinner, I want to escape the bondage of sin. I must first confess and repent. Then I need the salvation of Jesus to be able to be reborn. I am longing for a new life, longing for Jesus' love and mercy to come into me. So I want to be baptized and born again. Take up my cross and follow the way of the Lord Jesus.
Yes.
Amen. So can we agree that to say seeking the truth is a very good reason to find yourself at the feet of Jesus? And that's what this man was doing. He didn't know what he was looking for. He just said, what I've been given is a lie. And I'm gonna chase after what's true. And so he started chasing after what was true. And he found himself one day reading the Bible and saying, I found it. I finally found it. It's so powerful. It's so powerful. Maybe you're here this morning and you don't know what truth is. Maybe you're here this morning and you don't believe that there's even such a thing as truth. And if that's you, let me tell you, you're not alone. That's kind of the air that we breathe in our world today. Live your truth has become the mantra of our world today. It's kind of spoken like a moral imperative, and to suggest that someone not live their truth, or to suggest that there is only one truth, is considered a grave imposition on a person's sovereign autonomy. And this is the challenge that we live in a Western world, a world full of innumerable little truths, right? Of course, truth in the world that Paul, whose testimony we just heard, truth in the world that he grew up in was very different. That wasn't an individualistic live your truth mindset. In a communist world, there's a collective mindset, right? That tells you what the truth is that you're supposed to believe. And it was in that world that something in Paul made him pause and say, wait, is that really true? Is what they're trying to force feed me really true? And he said, I'm not sure that it is, but I want to find out. I've said it before in our church, I love truth seekers. Okay? Jesus has a soft spot for truth seekers as well. Not the people who claim to have it all figured out. And I know that kind of puts me in a weird spot because I'm like supposed to be the guy who knows it all, right? Like I'm the guy with all the answers, right? Jesus really likes truth seekers. I want to be a truth seeker continually until the day I see Jesus again. Jesus loved people who were curious and said, I want to know what's true. I'm so grateful for Paul for saying it so plainly like that. I have been seeking the truth. That's what brought me here today. That's why I'm here. Why are you here? Is it habit? Is it religion? Is it checking off the spiritual box? Or maybe for some of you, it's a deep longing for what's true, a desire to find what's true, maybe even get close to what's true, because you found it, and because you found it, and it is so irresistible to you, that you run to it, you want to be near to it, and you want to celebrate it, whatever chance you get. So the passage that Pastor Cindy read for us today, it's a strange one. Here's why it's strange. Cleopas and his walking companion, most scholars think it was his wife, Mary, they're walking to Emmaus, which is bizarre, right? Why are they walking to Emmaus, okay? Well, Pastor, what's so strange about that? Maybe they live in Emmaus. Maybe they have business in Emmaus. What's so strange about walking to Emmaus? Well, it's not so much the destination that's strange, it's what's behind them, right? What's strange is that they are walking away from Jerusalem. By the way, we just spent a whole sermon series during the series of the season of Lent talking about the road trip to Jerusalem. So they spent all this time getting to Jerusalem, where Jesus was going to do all this amazing stuff, and salvation was going to come to the world, and now they're walking the other direction. How could they possibly be walking away from Jerusalem at this moment? Earlier that same day, they had just been with the rest of the disciples. We know that from verses 22 through 24 that Cindy just read for us. And they heard from the women who came back from the tomb with the message, Jesus is alive! So these two, Cleopas and probably Mary, they had been among the first people in history, in the world, to hear the message, Jesus is alive. And what do? Somehow, mysteriously, they're walking away from Jerusalem. What? How could they walk away from that news? And they seem kind of confused about it, which we'll see in a moment. Anybody here ever been to Disney World? Anybody? Bunch of hands? Okay. I've been to Disney World. Oh my gosh, I can't even count anymore. Which is like, it's like the height of privilege to be able to say that. But like people around the world like are just flocking to Disney World right now. It's bonkers down there. You can't like, it's a mess. I would not want to go down there right now. We took the kids to Disney World just a few years back, and they knew well in advance that we were going to be going to Disney World. We wanted that anticipation to build. We wanted their imaginations to kind of run wild, their hopes to build up, all that good stuff. Now, some parents take a very different approach, all right? And they surprise their kids the day of. Some of them even do it, like, at the airport. Like, they say they're going to grandma's or something like that, and they're going to, like, fly there. And then they show up in the airport, and they're like, actually, we're going to Disney World. And there's all kinds of YouTube videos that you can see of parents surprising their kids with a trip to Disney World. So I grabbed one. I didn't look long and hard and deep because I didn't have to. I grabbed just one for you guys to see. It's about a minute long, so indulge me for a moment. We're going to watch this together. Can you guys turn it up?
Get up and get ready. No, we're not joking.
Let's go. You guys can stop it. Okay, so just some quick observations here. Can we all agree that these parents have some amazing news to deliver to their young daughter? It's like the best news ever. We're going to Disney World. It's amazing. Did you also notice that she's a bit confused? All right? She reads this little poem that's like terrible, right? That the parents wrote. Here's a picture of the girl. That's her after she's like, "What was that? What was that?" That's the face that she made. It's the face of utter confusion, all right? Then she starts opening the present, and she even says out loud, she says, "I do not get this," all right? But my favorite is after she hears this amazing news that they're going to Disney World, and what does she do? She says, "Is this a joke?" To which her parents say, "No, this is really happening." And she says, let's go. Now, in those two ways, amazing news and utter confusion, all right, this little girl is not unlike the two disciples that are on the road to Emmaus. They have just heard the most amazing news ever. Jesus has been raised from the dead. Can you believe it? It's unreal. Like, it's the best news in the world. In fact, they even used the word amazing. I said, the women, it says, amazed us by telling he's alive. So they were amazed. Not unlike this little girl. But they're also a little confused, not unlike the little girl. Look at the way that they keep talking about Jesus, all in the past tense. Well, Jesus of Nazareth was a prophet. He was powerful. We had hoped that he would save us. They are living a pre-resurrection reality. They're living as pre-resurrection people in a resurrection world. They're utterly confused about what has happened. They're utterly confused about what is true. They're like the little girl who says, is this a joke? Resurrection? Come on. Listen, we got to go to Emmaus. We got stuff to do. Here's where the illustration breaks down a little bit. Look back real quickly and see what this little girl does when she's told this actually is true and this is happening. Can we just show that?
Get up. Get ready. No, we're not joking.
Not a joke. Let's go. Let's go. All right, all right. You can stop it. Let's go. Let's go. Did you catch that? Hard to miss. This is true. We're going to Disney World. Little girl says, let's go. Let's go. She's on her way. It's happening. Like, I cut the clip a little bit short, but she's like walking out the door. Like, it's happening. I am here for it. Let's go. Now, where are our two disciple friends? Are they running to the tomb? Nope. And now we know a couple of other disciples who did run to the tomb. Are they waiting with the other disciples in Jerusalem? Are they pausing to remember all the times that Jesus told them that this was exactly what was going to happen? Where is the let's go? Instead, they're just going about their lives. They're on the road to Emmaus. They are completely without hope. In fact, it says there in verse 17, they stood still, their faces downcast. On Resurrection Sunday, their faces downcast. It's here that the risen Jesus steps into the midst of their confusion. Mysteriously, though, they have no idea that it's him. And there's probably more that could be said about that, but for now, it's just important that we know he's there, and they don't recognize him. And I love how Jesus just plays along with them, almost like a parent who has incredible news but wants to drag it out a bit, right? He asks them, what are you discussing together as you walk along? To which Cleopas asks, are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who doesn't know the things that have happened here in these days? You've got to love the fact that Cleopas is astonished at the ignorance of Jesus, right? When in fact, it's Cleopas and his companion who are the only ones living in utter ignorance of the resurrected Jesus right in front of them. Friends, this verse right here should give us great pause. How often do we turn our face toward God and say, don't you understand? Let me tell you the way things are. When it's us, we're the ones who are utterly ignorant of what is true, talking to a God who is the very essence of truth. No, God, let me tell you how it is. Isn't that the game that we play when we live our lives in submission to our truth, our ways, our understanding? That's these two. The truth was staring them right in the face, and they could not or would not see it. Cleopas, Mary, Jesus is alive. We've been to the tomb. He's not there. The angels told us he's risen. He is alive. Okay. Not so sure about that, but we've got to go to Emmaus, see? And so we'll just see how everything turns out. What? It's like a kid hearing from their parents, we're going to Disney World. And the kid says, yeah, oh gosh, that sounds fascinating, but I've got school today. What? No, the kid stands up on their bed, arms in the air, and says, yes, we're going to Disney World, let's go. What are you doing with the news of resurrection? Is it changing the schedule of your life? Is it transforming who you are and the way you look at a very messed up, messy world? Or is it just business as usual? For Cleopas and Mary, saddened as they were about the crucifixion of Jesus, they were still returning to business as usual. News of resurrection? Okay, maybe. It takes a while for Jesus to break into the conversation, and when he does it in a big way. We only get the beginning of the conversation because he goes on to explain the entire Old Testament to them while they're walking. By the way, don't ever let anybody tell you that we don't need the Old Testament anymore. Clearly, we see right here, Jesus thinks the Old Testament is pretty darn important. He like explains the whole thing to them while they're walking on the road. But he doesn't start with the teaching. What does he start with? He starts with rebuke. Ooh, like we never like that part about Jesus, do we? Like, can we just have the warm, fuzzy, you know, Jesus is my homeboy Jesus? And not the Jesus that rebukes, but here he rebukes. He says, how foolish are you? How slow to believe. What an interesting twist, right? In our world today, we're called fools for believing in the resurrection. One of my sons, he's been trying, he's the little evangelist, but he's been trying to tell his friends at school what he believes about Jesus and telling them about the resurrection. Like, hey, he sees Easter coming up. He's like, I want my friends to know Jesus is alive. I'm like, is this like pastor patting himself on the shoulder? Like, let's check out my kid. Like, no, I don't know. Like, I don't know where he came from. I'll tell you what. But right on cue, let me tell you, just like Jesus said they would, he's been made fun of by his friends. And he comes home sad about it. He's like, I don't know what to do. And he says, I don't think they're going to believe. The Apostle Paul walked into the city of Athens, and he told some of the smartest people in the world about resurrection. And you know what they did? He says they laughed at him. They sneered. People have been hearing about the resurrection of Jesus for 2,000 years and laughing at it, saying, resurrection? Come on. That does not happen. That's ridiculous. Resurrection, that's foolishness. But here comes Jesus, resurrected. And what's the first thing that he says to his disciples on the road? He says, no, you're fools. You're the fools. Jesus turns the table. It's not the believers who are fools. It's the ones who fail to look. The ones who fail to get curious. The ones who fail to hear, wait, resurrection? I want to hear more about that. Kind of like the others in Athens that Paul was talking to. Like some of them laughed at them, but others said, we want to hear more about this. Resurrection? I'm curious about that. But no, Jesus says it's the fools are the ones who hear resurrection say, meh. Yeah. I need to go about my business. I need to get to Emmaus. Where are you today? Do you hear the name Jesus and there's a desperate longing that kind of wells up in your soul? I don't want to completely throw Cleopas and Mary under the bus. The Spirit was moving in their lives, as the Spirit is moving in your lives as well. And so as they were walking with Jesus, unaware that he was the risen Lord, this is how they described what they were feeling inside. Even when they were ignorant of who he was, This is what they felt. Were not our hearts burning within us when he talked on the road, when he opened the scriptures to us? And let me tell you, for all of you, those of you that I know, those of you that I have just met for the first time today, what I want for each and every one of you is that we might have hearts burning within us, a passion, a longing, a feeling that something, that someone is so true, it's not just a truth, it's the truth. It's what I've been looking for and longing for my whole life. And I want to be nearer and nearer to it. Worship team, you guys can come up. They just disappeared. So look at what happens when they finally realize. All right, verse 30 through 31. Jesus is at the table with them. It says he took the bread, he gave thanks and broke it and began to give it to them. It says, then their eyes were opened and they recognized him and he disappeared from their sight. Here's another reason why the Old Testament is so stinking important. Without the Old Testament, we can't see the beautiful reversal that's happening in this moment. Verse 31 says, then their eyes were opened and they recognized him. This is a reversal of what happened in Eden. What happened when Adam and Eve disobeyed God? They ate. They're having a meal too, just like Cleopas and Mary are having a meal with Jesus. No, it's that Adam and Eve were having a meal. They ate the forbidden fruit. And what does it say? Their eyes were opened and they realized they were naked. The being naked wasn't the sin, by the way. It was the, oh my gosh, like the world just got different, very different. And in their disobedience, they lost God and they found a world that was very broken, that was hard, where you plant plants and sometimes they come up and sometimes they don't. Where you have a son and another son, and one of them kills the other. That's the world that Adam and Eve found. But here we see how the resurrection is setting in motion a restoration of what fell apart in Eden. Their eyes were opened, and they recognized not we're naked, not something's broken here, not this world is falling apart. No, their eyes were open and they recognized the resurrected Lord. And what do they do now? Now that they know, now that their eyes have been opened, where do they go? Do they keep going to Emmaus? Business as usual? No. No. Luke tells us that they got up as fast as they could, and they ran back to Jerusalem. And church, I want to tell you, with tears and pleading and honest hope for every single one of you and those who are going to be baptized later today, that we might be like Cleopas and Mary. Even though Jesus called them fools, can we still be like them? And with everything that we have, turn and run back to the risen Lord. If we believe, run to Jesus. If we're curious, run to Jesus. If we have doubts, run to Jesus. Do you want truth or do we still want lies? Do you want what is true or do you want your truth? Truth matters, friends. And if the resurrection is true, and that is what we are declaring today, just to be clear, we actually believe this is real. This is why we're standing here today, because we actually believe a physical body walked out of the grave, alive. if the resurrection is true, then it demands a change of course. It demands we make different choices. And that's the rub, isn't it? That's why we often run back to the, no, I'd rather have my truth, right? Many of us don't want a change of course. We like the road to Emmaus. If the resurrection is true, well, that's kind of inconvenient for me. And so we miss the fact that it is indeed the greatest news that we could ever hear, that death doesn't have power anymore. And if death doesn't have power anymore, then a lot of things don't have power anymore. Vladimir Putin, like, he's like a nobody, right? Everything else starts to topple. Racism topples. Human trafficking topples. Massive poverty and human migration falls apart because then people actually get to stay in their homes where they want to stay. Loneliness falls apart. Addiction falls apart. Abuse, pandemics. All these things start to topple because the Son of God walked out of a tomb 2,000 years ago. And what do Cleopas and Mary hear from the other disciples when they finally arrive back in Jerusalem where they should have stayed the whole time? When they get back there, what do they hear from the other disciples? They hear this. They hear, it's true. It's true. It's true. It's true. Paul Huang, whose testimony we heard earlier, sat in his Chinese schools when he was a boy. Something that most of you never had to do. And he was taught what to believe. That the world was made by an accident. That evolution without design is the way this whole world works. That all of this is just an accident. And he sat in those Chinese schools and he was taught what to believe about a world made by accident and evolution without design. He was taught about a world that has no God. He was pointed at lies and said, this is true. See, 2 + 2 = 5. You better believe that. But something inside him, a curiosity placed there by the Holy Spirit, made him look around and ask, why? Is that really true? He looked and looked until one day he picked up a Bible and started reading, and he encountered a man named Jesus. And like Cleopas and Mary, his eyes were opened to the risen Lord. Friends, have your eyes been opened? Has your route been changed? Some of you might say yes. But you know, maybe recently you've just been going through the motions. My encouragement is get close to Jesus. Let your heart burn within you at the beauty of the truth and the nearness of his life to your life. That we too might be the kind of people that run back to Jerusalem. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. We thank you so much that you are the kind of God who is willing to lovingly call us fools when we're being foolish, and yet lovingly open up our eyes when we need eye opening. God, make us curious about what's true. Give us courage to reject the lies that surround us, and they are many. And they feel good, and they look good. Jesus. Move, that we might celebrate who you are, know who you are, believe what is true. In your name, Jesus.